Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our Friday presentation. I appreciate you all coming out on this day of limited visibility, and the roads are a little slippery. I'm Rod Finkel, the president of the council this year. I'd like to thank one of our board members, Michael Cook, for recording today's program. Today's program will be available for you to download on the KSKA Public Radio website. Just go to kska.org and search for AWAC Presents. I'd like to introduce our head table now. To my far left is our Vice President, Keith Steinbaum. We thank him for joining us. Sitting next to him on his right, we have a member of the Board of Directors, William Tour, and he will introduce our guest speaker. And Will, I'll let you do the honors now.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Rod. It's a pleasure to see you all here on this cloudy day. I hope that during the course of our presentation that perhaps we'll raise the veil on the cloud cover just a little bit. It is indeed my pleasure to introduce today Andrea Baker, and I'd like to thank Andrea for accompanying me today to East High School, where she spoke before a group of the economic students in our senior high school. It was well presented, and I think that the children had a particular interest in wikis, blogs, and Twitter. And if those words are foreign to you, stay tuned. You're going to hear more. Andrea served in the United States Army as a signals intelligence analyst and an Arab linguist. She is a disabled American veteran, and I am confident that among all of us, we thank you for your service to our nation. She's also multifaceted in that she's a former jazz singer and a music industry promoter. Ms. Baker is the director of Enterprise 2.0 for Navstar Incorporated, under which she is a consultant for the federal government and private industry. She has supported various agencies throughout her career, such as CIA, DIA, NSA, and NOAA, and the Pentagon. She specializes in the user community advocacy as an application development liaison through tools like wikis, blogs, and other social media. Again, those keywords. July 2009, Ms. Baker became Executive Vice President and Programming Director of the Social Media Club, Washington, D.C. We so much appreciate Andrea coming so far to visit with us today. I present to you, and please welcome Andrea Baker to our program.
Thank you so much for having me today. As you can tell, I do speak quite often, and so I have lost my voice a little bit. So bear with me if it squeaks a little bit. I promise you that it's not normal. And I think after this, I might actually switch from jazz to blues. I also want to just say, just for the sake, because this is being recorded, that my opinions today are of my own and not for my employer or any government agency that I happen to work with. And I say that for legal purposes. Okay. So I really do appreciate you having me out here today. I actually don't mind the fog because this kind of gives me a little sense of closeness. I think we're all brought more together because of it. I wanted to share with you some of my experiences of how I actually got into this multifaceted background that I had. When I was in high school, I didn't want to go to college. And I mentioned this earlier to the high school that I spoke at earlier. I wanted to do nothing but be a singer. So I didn't really focus on schools and studies until I got my first report card. And I realized if I wanted to do something in the world, I still got to keep my grade point average up. So I got myself in gear, and I studied hard, but I still didn't want to go to college, so I decided to join the U.S. Army, thinking that that was going to get me out of the state of New Jersey, where I happened to live at the time. It did. I was able to travel around the world, and I ended up in Germany, where I studied HTML at night while I was working on the back of a deuce and a half in in Augsburg in Gablagan Concern, which no longer exists to this day. The U.S. Army closed that facility down. And while I was out there, we had to send information back to NSA, and we did this through FTP. Anybody know what FTP is? It's a few people. File Transfer Protocol. Nobody really uses it. Well, we use it, but we don't really say it anymore like that. So we were doing this every night, sending back all our information that we collected. And it was kind of a tedious task. I said, well, there's got to be a better way to do this. So, that, as I said, I was learning HTML at night, trying to figure out how to write code. And it was back in 1996 when Intellink had only been around for 2 years. And Intellink is the top secret government network. It's also on CipherNet, which is the secret network. And so I decided to build the 66MI website to start putting information on there and sharing it back with NSA and the people back there at the fort so they could send it, look at the information and start processing it and sending it back with their analysis. And we were doing this in support of the Bosnian crisis and Kosovo and all the things that were happening over there at the time. So with that, a little bug hit me. I was like, wow, we're sharing information. So I spent the rest of my career trying to find more information, how to learn more things on the web. And when I got out of the Army in 1998, I decided that I would create my own website. I'd create a website that would share my experiences with music. I'd like to go to clubs and see things and go out and write up my review of how the night went, take pictures, and share it. And this was around in 1999. And at the time, we didn't call it blogging, but you could probably say it was one of the earliest stages of blogs out there. And at that time, there was probably 100 bloggers in the world. So I didn't consider myself a blogger back then, but in retrospect, I do. And so I started getting a lot of attention from national artists, and I started realizing I could focus that attention back on some artists that I like back home. So I started working with music artists and bands in the Washington, D.C. metro area, and I created my own business. And what I did with that was I used something called e-groups, or you might know them now as Yahoo groups. And I don't think anyone even uses them anymore in this room. We've kind of gone beyond that technology. And I would use that these e-groups to actually coordinate between the musicians and their fans, how they can get together and travel from city to city and actually have a successful show. And this worked out really well because I actually helped several bands get signed out of the Washington, D.C. area, some of which you probably would know today, but I won't say any names. So after this, I decided, well, that was fun, but I really wanted to get back into government. I really liked the work. I was working at NSA during the day while I was doing all this music business at the night, so it was quite tiring. So I decided to retire from the music industry for a while and just kind of focus on government. And so we fast forward a few years later, and I find myself back working at the CIA for my customers, and they said they had this great new project that was just starting out, and it was called Intellipedia. Has anybody heard of that? Intellipedia? A couple guys back there in uniform have, sure. Intellipedia is the intelligence community's wiki. Have you guys heard of Wikipedia? And everyone here has used it, probably. You've probably gone online. Has anyone ever edited Wikipedia? No? Do you know you can? Anybody in the world can. And you can change that. So, in fact, I encourage you, maybe go home today after this and look up Anchorage and maybe see if there's anything, maybe even a little comma, a period, something you can go on there and fix. I'm sure some bad grammar's on there somewhere. So, so I started working with the intelligence community's wiki, Intellipedia. And they brought me in special, and they hired me to be the first full-time gardener. Now, that's an interesting word, gardener. Gardener is a person that's going to tend to the community, make things grow, make the knowledge grow. So they had me specifically focus on the Top Secret Network. It's available on Top Secret, Unclassified, and the CipherNet Secret level. And so what I did was I would sit there and I'd focus on making the environment grow, and I started finding other like-minded individuals that could actually help me grow it. And we started creating a little chat room and having back and forth about, titles of pages and names of categories. And it was very, very interesting. And it eventually grew on. And now Intellipedia just celebrated its third year in existence, and we've got over 1.5 million edits. And I will tell you, Wikipedia, it took them several years to get over 1 million edits. So we in the intelligence community there, we did it much faster and I think a lot better. So my talk here today is kind of interactive, and that's a little background of at least how I got into the community management side of government. And so I've moved on from Intellipedia, and I have employees that still work there. But now I'm working on innovation and changing government in bigger and better ways. And so this talk is not a typical talk. As you see, there's no PowerPoint presentation. I don't believe in them. I never did, even when I was in the military. So I thank you. I don't believe in PowerPoint because I believe, just like when I was in the military and we would speak at the change of shift briefing, that we were sitting there reading exactly the bullets that were on the screen. So it really wasn't any benefit to anybody. So, I mean, go here. I actually like to brief live from the web. So let this come up. And so this is perfect timing. This is the Open Government Initiative that was announced Tuesday by the White House. It's changing the way Washington works. Well, that's my MO. That's what I do for a living. I change the way Washington works and hopefully the world. I don't work typical hours. I like to come in a little bit later and I like to stay a little bit later at night. I find out it helps tremendously, especially when you're working with a large community base that is a worldwide base. Nobody really works 9 to 5. You know, everyone works in their own way. So the Open Government Directive was announced Tuesday by the Obama administration, and it is to make certain things happen in government. And the points, the bullet points of it are government should be transparent, participatory, and collaborative. Well, that's how I work. That's how I get government to share. I believe in those things. And this is, when you go to the website, you can learn more. But the things right here on the front page, you might have seen it if you've been to the White House, the IT federal dashboard. You can actually see how government is spending money and sharing it, and what contractors are getting the most money. I'll tell you that my company is not on that top list. You see that the military has a mil wiki up there, and there's Army Field Guide. So you guys back there, you can check it out and see if there's anything you need to add. And there's also now this recent flu.gov. Have you guys heard about it? So now, you know, with the flu is going around, we have H1N1. You can actually go and find out a lot more information about the flu. And so the government is being very proactive in trying to get information and websites out there. How many of you travel? Travel a lot. You know, a little remote in the world up here. So you probably do go through TSA. Right? Did you guys know that TSA has a blog? TSA has a blog. Does everyone know what a blog is, by the way? I'm going to throw out social media terms. I want to make sure you know what they are. A blog is a dialogue that is usually put on the web and is established by one person or a group, and then it allows for commentary and discussion in a linear format. So the TSA has a blog, and this is information that has been vetted by the organization and is put out there for announcements and such. And let me tell you that this blog has been very successful. It's one of the most successful case studies of federal government. It is a way that the TSA can announce new changes about their procedures and get feedback instantaneously from flyers. And one of the best case studies I think the TSA has is that when the MacBook Air came out, it had no moving parts. So people were taking their MacBook Airs on through security, and security was having them come out and take them out of their bookcases or book bags or, you know, whatever that they were in, and saying, well, what is this? This doesn't, you know, move. It looks like a computer, but, you know, I'm not sure. And so with all that, people were putting on the blog, well, yes, this is, you know, this Mac, linked to the Mac website. You know, this does exist. This is a real thing. And they were able to change legislation within the TSA to say, yes, you can bring your MacBook Air on the plane. It also was a good case study in the fact that a lot of people, they're so paper thin, a lot of people were taking them and putting them in the little seat back areas where you can put your magazines, and then they would forget that they put their MacBook there. So people were able actually to use the TSA website to successfully track down their MacBooks. So if you ever have an issue with the TSA, I highly recommend to actually, they're actually on Twitter as well, and I'll explain Twitter in a second. If you ever have an issue, to use their blog to give them feedback. They say got feedback. In fact, if you ever take your shoes off and put them in the tray, take a look down in the tray that you're putting your shoes in. It does have that big symbol that says got feedback and puts the TSA's website on there. So they're very in your face about that. Now I mentioned Twitter. How many people in here know what Twitter is? It's about half. How many people are on Twitter? So am I. I'm at Immunity, or at Andrea Baker. I have both names. I'm honored to that. I also have several other personas that I have. I'm multiple personalities. And one of them I actually had run, and I was going to explain to you this week. One of the Twitter feeds I had was for OPM, the Office of Personnel Management. I'm not a member of the Office of Personnel Management. They don't employ me, but they do have an RSS feed. How many people know what RSS is? Okay. RSS is really simple syndication, and that means that any information that a website puts out, they can push it out through other means, and it can show up in your cell phone or any other feed reader. And I might go into that if we have time. So I created a Twitter account because I wanted to know in Washington, D.C., if it snowed if the government was going to be closed, because for us, we know at 4:30 in the morning, but I didn't want to wake up at 4:30 in the morning if I knew the government was going to be closed that day, so I didn't have to go into work. I wanted to sleep in. So I figured that I would create a feed based off of the RSS that they provided and put it on Twitter. I'd like to show you that. However, it was hacked. It was hacked, and so now somebody else has the account, and I have to fight now with Twitter to get it. But that brings me a good point. If you are a representative of federal government and your organization would like to be involved in using social media, always grab your account first thing you can. Branding and personal brand is very important with the federal government. So I'm going to track down a person at OPM when I get back, and I'm going to fight the case so that they get their Twitter feedback and it make it official. In fact, all Twitter feeds that are verified official have that verified check account, just like when you go to a bank website and it says verified by Visa or, you know, it's FDIC, there's a little symbol saying that it's real. And I have a feeling that maybe they tried to reach me, but I didn't have my email account updated on that. So I digress. We're going back to open government. The announcement is right here, the president's memorandum, right on the website. It's probably three clicks from the top. But again, it says government should be transparent, collaborative, and participatory. And I believe this because if you've listened to or the words of the Constitution, you know, for the people, by the people. And so if you think about that, well, how long has the government really been about them telling us or what to do and not really getting that feedback back? Now, if you're a little more active in government, you probably read some rules and regulations. I know when I worked at NOAA Fisheries, I used to put out the rules and regulations every Friday afternoon, stayed really late to make sure those emails went out. But not everyone is an active citizen 2.0, as I like to call it. 2.0. I say that a lot in my line of work. And that just means a second generation of how things used to be. And so the government is now trying to make government 2.0, excuse me, a second generation of the government that is more participatory, more collaborative, and that connects with the citizen 2.0, the citizen that is more active and participatory, and so sharing this information together. And so in ways to do that, I've showed you how TSA does that. There's the ability to open up information and open up data. And that was one of the initiatives that Vivek Kundra, the CIO of the United States, the CEO, or the CTO. I get those two confused. They are trying to open up all the data streams from federal government. Right now, only three states in the United States provide data to the data.gov website, and I can bring that up. As I said, I like to do things live and on the fly, so hopefully their site's up. Data.gov is where all federal government and state governments will be able to put all their information out, and so citizens can take this information and manipulate it in ways they feel that they can understand it. So right now, there's only a small amount of data sets, and my prediction for 2010 is that every state in the union will have at least one data set available. And with this regulation that just came out on Tuesday, all federal agencies will have something available within 60 days. We'll see if that happens. So data.gov, if you'd like to go to that. So what kind of inspired data.gov is back in 2008, there was a contest in Washington, D.C. called Apps for Democracy. And what that did was it was trying to find information to make living in D.C. a little bit better with opening up the information that was available in D.C. This is the time when Vivek Kundra was the CTO of Washington, D.C. So he said, here, I'm giving you the data. Citizens, come back and please give me useful ways where this information can be used. So they did, and they were able to come up with some very interesting things. One of my favorite websites is called Stumble Safely, and that's how to find the best, safest route home based on the crime rate that has been had been reported. So just think about that. If that information from your local police department or where the local bears have been going, you know, out in the summertime, you'd be able to find out where the bears are hanging out the most and maybe want to avoid that street. So then that was a success. So they took it to the next level, and they made Apps for America. And one of the websites that I like out of here is Data Masher. And I think I brought it up right here. So you can pick a data set. And then you can pick your, you know, operator plus or minus, and then you can look at your mashup, and you can see people are doing their latest mashups. And this is actually interesting since we have some students in the crowd. We have SAT and ACT scores in here, so we can go and look at the mashup and see it's loading because I am on a netbook, and we can see in here, the highest and lowest SAT scores. So we can see that the highest SAT scores are in Michigan, the highest math scores, and Illinois, and Mississippi. And so it's interesting that the middle of the country, that the Corn Belt, I guess, is the highest scores here. Very interesting. And I'm able to take that off of national data that has been available. Where's Alaska on there?
Oh, there
we go. So the average ACT score in 2008 was you're ranked 30th in the nation on that. And the average scores for reading and math combined are 1,000. So you can see that. So hopefully you got above that, right? Above 1,000? Okay. So you're setting the curve. So now Apps for America was a success, and back in September of 2009, at the O'Reilly Government 2.0 Summit in Washington, D.C., they announced that they're doing apps for the Army. So what I'm interested to see how that's going. It's going on right now. We'll find out, I think, in February of the success on that and what kind of information. But there seems to be like a roadblock when it comes from government mashups inside the firewall to outside the firewall. Does everyone understand what I mean by the firewall? Okay. Being that there's when you're outside the firewall and you have your information out there, anyone who decides to be a little bit a genius can go out there and start making information happen with a mashup. And a mashup is taking one set of information, combining it with another, and then getting a whole new set of information, like I just showed you with the data masher. And what we have is a problem on the inside is because we don't have the ability on the inside of government to actually have the server space to create these kind of mashups. So the information that we have internally isn't as easily sanitized as it can be done on the outside. And so what I'm trying to maybe look for from you guys is to get some ideas of how we can actually do that. How can we actually change government from the inside and share that information a lot better so we can have an open discussion? And actually, if you have any question at any time, you can go ahead and raise your hand. Someone will come around with a microphone. I want to actually make sure I'm addressing your questions as we go. So I mentioned Intellipedia earlier. How you guys back there, you said you use it? Have you used it? What did you use it for? No, put you on the spot.
Yeah, we can't really answer that question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Intellipedia, let me go backwards on that. Intellipedia is a attributable point of view wiki. Well, when you go to Wikipedia, it's more of a non-attributable point of view. You can have a name to it, and you may be the expert, but someone else can come in and they can also say they are expert, and you kind of make it neutral. You come up with a neutral opinion on something. So when a celebrity dies or someone changes office, they usually lock the wiki page and nobody can really edit unless you're a trusted editor. Well, that's not the case with Intellipedia, and Intellipedia is open to anyone who has access to it, and they would like diversity in thought. So if you believe that there's information out there that's different from someone else's point of view, they encourage you to put it out there and say where you're from and why you believe it's different. So that's the two major differences between the wikis. And do you have a question? Should wait till the mic comes around.
Just a real quick one. Is it anonymous when you post on there?
No. Every user of Intellipedia has a unique name. And so no user groups are there. It's everyone's attributed down to the user level. And it's also accessible by your need to know and your clearance level. So you're able to only work in the space that you're allowed to work in. But yes, every edit is attributable. And so trust me, when somebody disagrees with someone, it does get back to them and conversations happens, management is called and things get discussed. And that's what we want to happen. And that's something that I'm hoping that the case study within the intelligence community actually transpires and goes to other agencies. OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, also has a wiki, as well as DOD. DOD has DOD Techopedia, the Department of Defense Techopedia, which is more technical in nature. There's also shared things like Army Knowledge Online, Defense Armors Knowledge Online, and A-Space, which I've heard people, and of course Time Magazine called it the Facebook for spies. I wouldn't quite say it's much like Facebook. Everyone does have a profile, and everyone has a way to interact. But you're not, you're not tagging someone in a photo, and you're not leaving comments on whether or not you guys had fun at beer pong last weekend. That's not happening in A-Space. So it's a little more professional. It's at a higher level discussion. It's a little different from the wiki. While the wiki is very robust and conversations are happening, the A-Space is a little more specific to certain topics, and it's not as, as loose as Intellipedia is. At this point, I'm going to pause for a moment and ask if there's any questions before I actually get into the social media aspect of government. No? Okay. Oh, another question in the front, and then I saw one in the back.
So with these military blogs going on, are people like at their desks watching these comments going on at work while they're working? Is it like the rest of us that are looking at our Facebook pages?
That's a very good question. I made a comment last week in the office, and I cracked my colleague up. I said, I don't think I Twitter on the weekends anymore. I only Twitter during the workday. And she said, did you realize what you just said? And I said, yeah, but our customer tweets, he was just tweeting that he was in the dentist chair. So I think that it's if it's used wisely and it's used in a productive manner, these tools can be very effective, and I can get to that in a minute. But I use Facebook if the network goes down or something happens where I can't reach the person. Maybe they went home for the day, and I know that I still have a question to ask, and I know that if I can reach them on Facebook, I can go there as a viable source to do that. I may not have their phone number. And that kind of helps me, because if I don't have someone in Denver, Colorado's phone number, and I'm in D.C., and I know that they got off, 2 hours before me, I need to be able to reach them, and if I know that they're on Facebook, I can use that as a way to reach them. Did I answer all your question there? Okay. And the question in the back.
I was just going to ask you to define a few of your abbreviations a little more specifically. Most of us don't have a lot of military background,
okay.
Recently at least.
Okay. If I do say something that you don't understand, an acronym or a term, I do try to pause and explain it. So if I inadvertently do that, please, like someone raise their hand and flash me down and say, no, can you explain that? Because I want to make sure everybody knows. So is there any term that anybody hasn't understood so far?
CTO.
Good one. Chief Technology Officer. The Chief Technology Officer and the Chief Information Officer of the United States are brand new positions established under this administration. It was something actually under huge debate during the campaign that Obama had. He said if he was elected President of the United States, that he would create a Chief Technology Officer to oversee technology in the United States, and he did do that. So that's Vivek Kundra and Anish Chopra. Those are the CIO and CTO of the United States. And Vivek was the one who was the CTO of Washington, D.C. before he took office for the president. So it was only a quick jaunt right down the street. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about social media. We kind of touched on that a little bit. Now, social media, and sometimes it's confused or jumped in with what Web 2.0 is. And Web 2.0 is the second generation of the internet where it's more user-generated. And I like to call it the user-generated internet. I don't like using 2.0, 3.0 things because we keep going. Who knows what number we're going to stop at. So I like to explain it as the user-generated internet. And you probably do this all the time and you don't even realize it. Web 1.0 was the, emailing back and forth. You go to a news website and you read it. You don't really maybe even comment. You just kind of read and absorb the information. But now Web 2.0 is if you're going to a website and an offers, and it's very clear that there is interaction wanted by the website. And so those are sites like YouTube, MySpace, Flickr, Facebook, Twitter, Delicious, and I know some of these are like, what? But that's okay. I can share that with you. Let's go to, just do one first that's a little fun. Flickr.com. This is a photo sharing site. And sorry, I said I'm a little slow. I'm using the Wi-Fi here at the hotel, so we're dependent on that. Maybe the fog is in the pipes. One and two. Okay. So Flickr.com is a photo sharing site, which I really like a lot because you're able to put out your pictures and share them with anyone. And for the most part, it's free. I actually have a paid account because I like taking pictures at every city I go to when I travel. So I want to make sure that all my pictures will be there as long as the site's existed. What I like about this is also lets you explore and news sites use these pictures. When the Mumbai crisis happened the day before Thanksgiving, I actually was trying to find photos of what was going on live in Mumbai at the time. And so I was able to actually just do a search on Mumbai and find pictures from someone who was actually on the scene and taking pictures of possible terror suspects. And we were able to take that information and kind of help with our analysis. So you can find pictures, but if I wanted to find, terrorism, I can look that up. And if I knew the specific person, which I can't recall the guy's name right at this time, I could find the pictures, but he could see like the hotels that were bombed in the path. So we were able to use social media in a way that was real time and real users being able to find that information live. Twitter was also a big player, and you've probably heard Twitter on the news. If you watch CNN, Fox, every news station now has Twitter. And it is very much something that the government is looking into, of how to use Twitter in a more meaningful way, of how to interact. Government websites, most of them are starting to have official Twitter feeds. And if you represent a government agency, I highly recommend that you get your government agency an official Twitter feed. Yes.
I'll give you an example that will be relevant. Whoa. I'll give you an example that will be very relevant for the folks here. Just a little bit. In town, the Alaska Volcano Observatory last year, I think it was last year when when it was burping a bit, they have a Twitter feed. And what's great is you could go, you could subscribe, it would message your phone when there was an ash advisory, et cetera. And it's a perfect example of what she's talking about, and something pretty relevant around here. So,
And I hear that you guys are constantly looking at those, I guess, for earthquakes and for volcanoes. And I think that's, because you scared me when I first got here, and they said 1964, the big earthquake wiped out most of downtown. I said, what floor am I staying on? Yes, so I recommend if you have a if it's a government agency or government or anything that is kind of news and citizen interest, of citizen interest, that you actually have a Twitter feed that provides the information. And you know, the White House established one when Barack Obama came over, took office. It was George Bush actually had a Twitter feed, not him personally. He didn't tweet, but his office did and his staff did. And I've kind of been told that Barack Obama actually never sent out a single tweet during his campaign. It was all his staff. I'm not sure about that, so don't quote me, and I know this is being recorded. But that usually when you get to that high office, it's not the individual. But we do know from cases that there are senators out there, senators and congressmen, that actually do tweet themselves. Your former governor was a tweeter, and she still is. May not be governor anymore, but she's still tweeting. So this is what Twitter is, and Twitter is 140 characters of text that is sent from a cell phone, a computer, applications, widgets. Widget is it's just another thing to access the web on your desktop, to put out a blast of information. And Twitter started with the phrase, what are you doing? And as you can see, it doesn't say that anymore. It actually says, am I doing this the wrong way? It says, what's happening? And they changed it because they realized people were answering all sorts of questions. When Twitter came on board in 2006, it was just mainly technologists and bloggers out of San Francisco that used it to kind of promote their own blogs and technology. Now people are using it around the world to put out breaking events and news and everything from what are they eating to you know, what movie they're going to see or what's on television at the moment. I like to use it to talk about where I'm going next or who I'm talking to or who I met, interesting people, and news bits back and forth. If I find a bit of relevant information to my job, I'll put it out there. I also like to use it to say if I'm going to be late for work or maybe a meeting's running longer. So my boss follows this and tells me, you know, can see what I'm doing. And I find it is a great productivity tool, especially if you have a team. And Twitter actually just announced something recently, listed over here, and listed is that you can actually set things to groups, so you can follow a specific list, and you can see that these are it's listed by people that find you interesting, and they put you on a certain list. So wow, that's a new one. Huffington Post has me under DC people, so that I don't know if I should be happy or sad about that. But then I have my friends and people who are following me, and they've organize me by how they would like to follow my thought. So if I find something interesting, so I could see that this guy, U2Gov, and out of LA, he's got Gov 2.0, which is the second generation of the government and interactive participatory government. He's got a list of all government 2.0 types. So if I read this feed, I would hope that most of the information here is government 2.0 related, and it's trusted by someone that I trust. So not everything in here is going to be related to government 2.0 because it's not completely filtered that way, but it puts me on that path. So that's kind of a little overview of Twitter. So one of the government feeds that I follow, the White House. So you can see that this is a verified account. When I mentioned earlier that it's a verified account, so this is proven and checked by Twitter that the information you will get here is verified and true information by the White House. And so this is one way of effective government communication and participation. But one thing you see, and you can probably notice if you've used Twitter, that none of the responses here, none of the posts are actually talking to anyone. They're broadcast posts. When you are talking to someone on Twitter, you use a little at symbol to have a conversation. You can see here that here people are talking to people, and when they are actually addressing someone, it says at, and it says the name. And so here's an example of a government tweet. This is a woman I know that works in D.C. government, and she's retweeting someone else, and retweeting is just re-sending the information along. She's retweeting someone else about the Department of Transportation hosting an open government directive workshop, which, because that information is relevant to me and something that I would like to know more about, there's a little star icon here. So I'm just going to go ahead and favorite that. And now that information is saved for me to know in the future. And because it's something that maybe my followers would like to know about, I'm going to go ahead and click retweet. And it says retweet to my followers. I say yes. And it updates. And as you can see, I have 2,300 people following me. I think that's relatively decent. I don't think I'm all that special. So I have now 2,300 people have actually gotten my message that I just sent out. So that information is now shared with those people. And so that's how easy Twitter works, as a little overview, especially the way we use it in government. Any more questions in general?
If you indulge me just a moment, I'd like to share something that I've learned about bridging domains. If you think about what people say first, what they say last, and what they repeat, that's significant because it's important to their presentation. People are important, their names are important, and numbers count. And for your search purposes and for purposes of sharing information, I've found that in my life to be helpful, so I would just pass that along.
I just want to thank you for your presentation. And one thing I'm interested in about using this technology is making the government obey its own laws, especially in Alaska, where our state motto is "We don't care how you do it outside." There is so much violation of law, and the only way you can do that if they don't listen is take it to court. And this gives us a way to get the information across to the appropriate people so we don't have to sue. And I'm leaving quite a trail of wreckage in my wake on state agencies that think, you know, you don't have a lawyer, you can't do anything. Well, yeah, you can if you're determined enough. It's just it costs the taxpayers a lot if you do it that way. So to put the government compliant with things like the Indian Child Welfare Act, so they don't routinely yank kids, put them in non-native homes, get them sexually abused, and they don't know they're in violation, or they don't know there is an Indian Child Welfare Act, or they don't care because it's too much trouble to find Native homes.
Excuse me, do you have a question?
Yes.
Would you ask it, please?
Yes. I would like to know how this technology can be used to get to everybody. So if they find the government in violation of things like disability law, Indian Child Welfare Act, just things that are plain, simple law that anybody can read and see, and you find a state agency in violation of it, how can we use the technology so somebody in the bush who is half literate can use it, or somebody that doesn't have education and computer skills can use it, and it is so widely available that somebody can go to somebody else and be shown how to make those connections?
It's a very interesting question, and I think it's going to take a lot of hands-on training to get, and it's unfortunate because, I mean, a lot of this technology assumes that you have some computer or phone knowledge, but it's also, the learning curve's relatively easy once you know how to access it and find it, and as I mentioned earlier, that the memorandum that was put out on Tuesday is that all government agencies, the heads of government agencies, need to start having websites that are open and transparent. And I don't know if that means in addition to the current website or an additional website for each government agency, but a way that citizens can actually reach out and see the information and find a way to report. So like in the case of the TSA, if there's a problem, you can actually report it to TSA. It's very clear how to do that. But in the cases of you know, how to report, you know, abuse and welfare instances, it's making sure that your state and government websites are up to date and have the ability to say, you know, report here, feedback here, and have that information out there, and then having that data available. So I think that's something that should be coming soon. Again, they have 60 days to come up with their plan, and then another 120 days, the CTO and CIO will review those plans to see if they're in compliance. And then after that, things will be executed. So in 2010 is going to be a very robust year for government information and data to absorb. So just look for that. There's going to be a lot of changes in 2010.
Thank you very much, Abigail.
Thank you.
We appreciate your coming, and as a memento of your visit here, we'd like you to have this book.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just to remind you, our programs will resume next year on the 8th of January. And we have a gentleman by the name of John McAuliffe, who is the executive director of the Fund for Reconciliation and Development. And he'll speak to us on, quote, From Hanoi to Havana, which is the rocky road to reconciliation. And as usual, the doors open at 11:30. Thank you all for coming, and I wish you a very safe and happy holiday.